Hey, my name is Legacy from the Perfect 10 Club, and you're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tammy Dillon of Germantown, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Sarah Trafton reports for Columbia Green Media that the town of Catskill heads into budget workshops this week with a tax rate headed up from $6.08 per $1,000 of assessed value to $7.06 per $1,000. Appropriations for the 2020 budget are estimated at $7,052,482, 3.9% ahead of this year. The first of four public workshops on the budget begin at 6:30 p.m. October 8th at Town Hall. Quote, "We are going to look for increased revenue and look for efficiencies," unquote, Town Supervisor Doreen Davis said. She said ambulance services were running $500,000 over budget, but the town has cut that deficit to $250,000. Davis also said revenue from building permits is up. Quote, "In September 2018, we had $32,698," unquote, Davis said. In September 2019, it was at $82,591. As a result of those numbers, we can look at the budget and ways to meet the needs of departments, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
David Lombardo is reporting for Capital Confidential. Voters in New York's 43rd State Senate District could see a rematch next year between the incumbent, Republican Daphne Jordan, and Democrat Aaron Glad from Brunswick. Jordan won the seat last year by 6 percentage points in the traditionally GOP district. Glad said on October 4th, when asked about running again, and I quote, "People are calling me and I'm listening, but no decision has been made," end quote. The 2018 race was closer than expected, with Republicans forced to spend more money than usual to hold on to the seat. This time around, the Democrats will likely have more money to throw at the race in 2020, but it is not clear if the Senate Republicans will be able to match them. Campaign spending notwithstanding, any Democratic candidate will have an uphill battle in the district where Donald J. Trump was very popular in 2016. Read the full story at Capital Confidential.
October 11th is the deadline to register in the November 5th town and county elections. This year, though, voting begins October 26th at a limited number of locations. Locally, Greene County has one location in Catskill, while voters registered in Columbia County have three locations to vote ahead of November 5th. The county office building in Hudson, the Martin H. Glynn Municipal Building in Valencia, and Copake Town Hall in Copake. In southern Albany County, the Helderberg Ambulance site at 978 Coal Hill Road in East Byrne will be set up for all voters registered in election districts in Byrne, Knox, and Rensselaerville and Westerloo. The Bethlehem Lutheran Church at 85 Elm Avenue in Delmar will be for voters registered in Bethlehem, Coymans, and New Scotland. In southern Rensselaer County, the Skodak Town Hall at 265 Sherman Road and Castleton on Hudson will be set up for early voting. To gain a political advantage, Republicans in the majority in Rensselaer County did not set up an early voting site in Troy, the county's largest city and home to more Democrats than GOP members. Quote, early voting is a game changer for New Yorkers who no longer have to choose between getting to work on time or exercising their democratic rights, unquote, said Common Cause Executive Director Susan Lerner.
Diane Baldwin is reporting for the Columbia Paper. A COPEC resident at a recent public meeting expressed concern that she had not received any code red calls of late. Columbia County's code red emergency notification system, a free service to relay emergency and weather alerts to residents, was rolled out in 2013. County 911 Director Rob Lopez said this week that the code red system is definitely operational and was recently used to alert Ghent and Chatham residents about a water main break and boil water order early in September. But Lopez said for the system to work properly, people should make sure their contact information, such as a landline or cell phone number and email address, if preferred, is updated. Lopez said residents receive emergency and general notifications and now have the option to receive severe weather warnings about tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, and flash floods. Columbia County residents can register for Code Red alerts by going to ColumbiaCounty911.com and completing the community notification enrollment form, or by calling Columbia County 911 at 518-828-1263 or Columbia County Emergency Management at 518-828-1212 for assistance. And you can read the full story in the Columbia Paper.
Jeanette Wolfberg in the Columbia Paper tells the story of Bus Route 711, which for a year has taken commuters back and forth from Catskill to Hudson on weekdays. Quote, we get a lot of college students, nurses who work at Columbia Memorial Hospital, and people who get on somewhere, go shopping, and come back, unquote, said a driver of the white 16-passenger van run by Greene County. The bus is meant for Greene County commuters to get dropped off at Columbia Greene Community College in Greenport, Columbia Memorial Hospital, and at the Amtrak station in Hudson. In Catskill, the vehicle picks up riders at the Price Chopper grocery store, the high school, and the courthouse. Riders can also hail the van along the route and ask the driver to get let out along the way. The bus leaves Catskill between 6 a.m. and 9:30 in the mornings and leaves Hudson stops for Catskill between 3:40 and 6:55 p.m. weekdays. Read more about this story in the Columbia Paper.
Patricia Doxey is reporting in the Daily Freeman. Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan outlined his proposed $342.28 million 2020 county budget October 3rd. Under the proposal, the size of the county government would grow. Spending is projected to increase by 3.9%, but the amount to be raised by property taxes will decrease by 0.25%. Ryan outlined his, and I quote, a Big Five, end quote, initiatives for the year: a Green New Deal for the county, tackling the opioid epidemic, growing and diversifying the county's economy, ensuring justice for all county residents, and creating a more responsive and responsible government. The plan calls for the creation of 27 new positions, including 7 new positions in the County Public Defender's Office and 2 new sheriff deputies, converting the part-time positions of Youth Bureau Director and Human Rights Commissioner to full-time, as well as the addition of a Chief Diversity Officer to help recruit candidates for employment with the county. The 2020 budget would also establish a Department of Economic Development. Ryan will use roughly $9 million from the county's $34.5 million fund balance and an anticipated increase in the county's sales tax revenue of about 5%. The legislature will vote on the final 2020 budget on December 4th. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
Steve Hughes reports in the Albany Times-Union that the Devil's Path Trail in Hunter has been closed from the Pequoy Notch Trail to the Twin Mountain Summit by the State Department of Environmental Conservation after vandalism along the hiking path. Steel rungs just installed in August, were vandalized and created a safety hazard along the trail. Hikers can still get to the Twin Mountain Summit from the east through the Jimmy Dolan Trail and the Predator Road, or through the Devil's Path from Indian Head Mountain. The DEC did not say when the section of the trail will reopen. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union.
David Lombardo is reporting for the Times-Union. A new Siena College Research Institute poll found that New Yorkers think the county's political climate is more divided than ever. 65% of respondents believe their fellow Americans are more partisan than ever, while 26% think the divide between liberals and conservatives has stayed the same. Siena College Research Institute Director Don Levy said approximately 1 in 4 state residents define themselves as centrist on social, economic, health care, and environmental issues. Among those surveyed, 60% believe that Donald Trump has contributed to, and I quote, unhealthy levels of political partisanship, end quote. New Yorkers, regardless of party affiliation, believe that social media, as well as cable and internet news, also produce negative levels of political partisanship. The poll was conducted between September 3rd and 24th, and you can read the full story in the Times-Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts Monday there should be rain. There's a 100% chance in the forecast, with a high near 63, a low around 47 Monday night, with an 80% chance of rain overnight, and patchy fog is also in the forecast for Monday night and Tuesday morning. Then it turns mostly sunny with a high near 61, low around 42 on Tuesday night. Wednesday, there's a 20% chance of showers. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 56 and a low around 42. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill Hudson, radio for open ears.
Listen out for these live broadcasts and extra web streams on the WGXC program schedule during the coming week. On Monday, October 7th, from 2 to 5 p.m., the City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment will live stream its budget workshop, which will focus on the youth and fire departments. The mayor, city treasurer, and president of the Hudson Common Council make up the Board of Estimate and Apportionment. You can tune in by going to WGXC.org, click on Listen, then scroll through the drop-down player to find the dedicated web stream. On Friday, October 11th, from 2 to 5 p.m., the City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment will live stream its budget workshop, which will be a review session. The mayor, city treasurer, and president of the Hudson Common Council make up the Board of Estimate and Apportionment. You can tune in by going to WGXC.org, click on Listen, then scroll through the drop-down player to find the dedicated web stream.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Monday, October 7th, the City of Hudson Board of Estimate and Apportionment Budget Workshop, focusing on the youth and fire departments, will be held at Hudson City Hall from 2 to 5 p.m. The Hudson Common Council will hold an informal meeting at Hudson City Hall at 7 p.m. The Hudson Area Library's nonfiction book group meets at 6 p.m. For this session, the group is reading parts 3 and 4 of These Truths by Harvard historian Jill Lepore. This reading group focuses on history and social and political life in North America and is facilitated by Library Board President Mark Orton. Les Filles de Iligadad from Niger perform, led by Fatou Saidi Gali. And Sparrow opens at BSP Kingston at 8 p.m. On Tuesday, October 8th, Learn to express yourself in real-life situations and develop Spanish language skills for work, travel, or just for fun. Lessons include grammar and vocabulary, as well as an introduction to arts and culture from different countries. This free program emphasizes conversational Spanish skills in a fun and friendly class. Visit HudsonAreaLibrary.org for all available class times and registration. Whether you photograph with a phone, a disposable camera, or the priciest SLR to be found, all are more than welcome to the Columbia County Photo Club meeting at the Hudson Area Library from 6 to 8 p.m. The Town of Catskill holds a budget workshop meeting. There is also a Town of Catskill Planning Board meeting at 7 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall on Main Street.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
They talk about the court in ways that make it politically salient. They mention things that the court has done on issues that voters care about. So if you're speaking, say, to an evangelical audience, and obviously evangelicals are a core Republican constituency, you talk about Roe v. Wade.
That was Williams College professor Justin Crow on how Republican politicians, including President Donald Trump, campaign on overturning Roe v. Wade, the 1973 landmark Supreme Court decision that affirmed a woman's right to access abortion. The Supreme Court is back in session today, and the two Trump-appointed justices, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh, who was confirmed 1 year ago yesterday, will be put to the test on abortion rights. More on that in a minute. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is back on the campaign trail after a blocked artery caused him to have a heart attack. Here's Sanders a few hours after leaving the Las Vegas hospital.
I'm feeling so much better. I just want to thank all of you for the love and warm wishes that you sent to me. See you soon on the campaign trail.
But back to the Supreme Court. It announced Friday that it will review a Louisiana case, June Medical Services v. Gee, that could either reinforce or undermine Roe v. Wade. By requiring doctors who perform abortions to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals, the law would close down two of the three remaining abortion clinics in Louisiana. In 2016, the court struck down a similar law in Texas. Here's former Representative Beto O'Rourke, a Democratic candidate for 2020 from Texas.
I want to tell you some of the consequences of this. In my home state of Texas, thanks to these trap laws that make it harder for providers to offer the full spectrum of reproductive care, not only can you not get safe legal access to an abortion, you cannot get access to a cervical cancer screening or a family planning provider.
Among Democratic voters in Iowa, close to 80% of caucusgoers told CNN supporting access to abortions is a must-have for their choice candidate. Other must-haves for primary voters are about the future of America, the more than 70 million children in the U.S. now. Today is National Child Health Day. In 2017, 5% of kids age 18 and younger didn't have health insurance, and in 2018, 18% of children lived in families with incomes below the poverty line, according to the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Here's Charles Brenner of Caucus for Kids, an Iowa coalition of children's services organizations raising children's issues to candidates on the campaign trail.
There's tremendous concern among the public around what the future holds for our kids and how we can ensure that all kids, regardless of their zip code, their race and ethnicity, their socioeconomic status, have a real opportunity to succeed and how we can build systems that really do support that.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Wolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org. Congressional leaders still are trying to hammer out a new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, and there's a lot on the line for workers in New York. The United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, would replace the 1994 agreement known as NAFTA. Nearly 800,000 New York jobs are supported by exports within North America, and about one-fifth of the state's total exports are sent to Canada and Mexico. Ford Motor Company's president of automotive, Joe Hendricks, explains the trade deal is especially crucial for the auto industry, which depends on the free flow of trade between the three countries.
So for our workforce, where one out of six vehicles produced in the United States are exported outside the U.S., having a competitive USMCA agreement ratified and certified so we can plan the business is very important to our manufacturing footprint and to our employees.
Ford alone exports 380,000 American-made vehicles each year. It's estimated that the USMCA will result in $34 billion in new investments for the auto industry and could create 76,000 new automotive jobs over 5 years. The deal raises the minimum wage and creates and protects manufacturing jobs by offering companies incentives for engineering and production in the U.S. Hendrick says that's good news for the 1,100 Ford employees in New York.
We support the USMCA because it's good for the U.S. auto industry, our suppliers that fuel our success, and the workers and families who depend on a strong Ford in this country.
Hendricks also believes the agreement will modernize policies to match the ways that auto manufacturing, supply chains, and the workforce have evolved in the 25 years since NAFTA took effect.
Let's get this planned. Let's get it approved so we can run our business plan for the future and continue to invest in America.
Mexico has already ratified the agreement. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is calling for lawmakers to approve the deal by the end of November, with hopes that Canada will ratify it around the same time. This is Mary Sherman, New York News Connection.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, Democrat from Rhinebeck, representing the 19th Congressional District, Paul Tonko, a Democrat from Amsterdam, the 20th Congressional District. 538.com website reports that so far, first-term Congressperson Delgado votes with Donald Trump's positions 4.3% of the time. Since Democrats took over the House of Representatives, Tonko also votes with Trump's positions 2.1% of the time. In the previous congressional session, Tonko voted with Trump 22.6% of the time.
Kerry Pickett reports for the Washington Examiner that Representative Antonio Delgado is largely mimicking what White House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is saying about impeaching the president. On September 27th, Pelosi said, and I quote, "This is a sad time for our country," end quote. And October 2nd, at a town hall meeting in Rhinebeck, Delgado said, and I quote, "This is sad. It's a sad moment in our country's history," end quote. Previously, Pelosi had written about, and I quote, "a grave new chapter of lawlessness," end quote, while Delgado, a Democrat representing the 19th Congressional District, said, and I quote, "We are literally about to embark on something that does not happen all that often in our country's history. It's a grave, serious environment that we're in," end quote. Both are mirroring Democratic talking points on the issue, but Delgado claims what he says are not talking points. Delgado said, and I quote, "It's not a talking point. I prefer you not call it a talking point. You're attributing words to me. I've used a host of different words. I've used sad, I've used sober, I've used serious," end quote. Read more about this story in the Washington Examiner. Matt Hunter reports for Spectrum News that on October 3rd, New York Senator Chuck Schumer and Representatives Paul Tonko and Antonio Delgado announced three bills set to be introduced in Congress to address limousine safety almost a year after 20 people died in a limo crash in Schoharie. The representatives were touting the Safe Limo Act, the Take Unsafe Limos Off the Road Act, and the End the Limo Loophole Act. The October 6, 2018 Schoharie accident took place at the intersection of State Routes 30 and 30A. Schumer, Tonko, and Delgado each commented on the bills.
"These bills will slam these loopholes shut get unsafe vehicles off our streets, and set federal stretch limo safety standards that will help save lives.
Vehicles that served as a death trap should not be allowed on the road. That while we cannot bring people back, we certainly can move forward in a way that reminds us that we're all in this together.
Kayla Harris reports in the Albany Times-Union that both Representatives Paul Tonko and Antonio Delgado hosted community events October 4th about rural broadband service with federal communications commissioners. Delgado's event was held at Columbia Green Community College, where the phones of attendees all said, no service. Quote, clearly every address that gets electricity should get broadband, unquote, said David Berman, the co-chair of Connect Columbia, a citizens group. Quote, just like electricity, which runs many devices essential to our lives, large capacity communication capability is far more than voice, internet, email, and tweets, unquote. WGXC broadcast the Delgado event and has a recording in the WGXC audio archives. Delgado also held a town meeting October 5th, broadcast by WGXC from Otsego County. The first-term congressperson gave an opening statement about impeachment.
I do think it's important to acknowledge what's been happening of late in Washington around the impeachment inquiry. I don't want to go for too much longer without acknowledging where we are right now in this country. For anybody who's been following me, you know that I was not out there calling for impeachment. It took a number of things to happen for me to get to a point where I thought I had no choice but to honor my oath, even if it meant that it might lead to more partisanship, unfortunately, and more divisiveness. I did not run for office to impeach the president. It's not why I signed up. I signed up because I wanted to serve the community. I wanted to serve those folks who have felt left behind by both parties for a good while now. And as somebody who grew up in upstate working class family who benefited mightily from a different era where everyday Americans were put first, that's what drove me. And so I was trying to keep my head down, trying to work, trying to get things done. I didn't go there to be a show horse. I went there to be a workhorse. And we were doing that, and I'm going to keep doing that. I'm going to keep doing it. But something happened when the president admitted his words. And that to me was the difference. He admitted that he solicited the aid of the foreign government to investigate a political rival. That, in my estimation, is a violation of his responsibility as oath and under election campaign laws of mine. And when you get to that level, when you're talking about national security, when you've lived through what we all know has been, no doubt, a meddling of our elections, every intelligence agency has concluded that we had to endure that in 2016. No American should want any foreign meddling in our elections. This is our democracy. We decide the outcome of our democracy, full stop. And any American that sees that it's okay to welcome, to bribe individuals or foreign actors to have any role in the outcome of an election is not putting the country first. They're not acting as if they care about the welfare of our democracy. They're not protecting our Constitution, as the president is obligated to do in his oath of office. Now, I'm not here to, nor I don't think anybody should, at any point, and this is for all my Democrats, take joy, celebrate in this reality. It is a sobering moment. We don't do this a lot in our country. When you are put in this position, this is a time for us to really come together to the extent that we can and truly try to figure out a way to put country first. We have to go through with the process of getting to all of the truth, getting to all of the facts, and hopefully along the way we can overcome some of the divisiveness that all too often I find happening, not just on the ground, but more importantly, I think, frankly, in the way the media covers this, the way journalists cover this. We've got to transcend all this and figure out a way to come together as Americans and understand it's about our national security. It's about national security. It's about protecting our elections. And for me, at the end of the day, I can't put anything above our democracy and what we mean to ourselves and to the world.
Emil Munson reports in the Albany Times-Union that after Delgado announced last week that he was in favor of impeachment, the Republican National Committee began airing a TV commercial locally attacking his support for inquiry into removing the president. Delgado shot back on October 5th by airing his own new ad on local airwaves. The RNC is spending $2 million on ads targeting more than 60 Democrats around the country, trying to shore up support for the president. Paul Tonko does not list any public events this week on his website.
This is Damian Katera. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. The airwaves as a creative medium.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cepho of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Monday, October 7th, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. Some divisive cases are on tap for the Supreme Court's new session, and a top automaker calls for progress on a new trade deal with Canada and Mexico. The Supreme Court starts its first full term with two of President Donald Trump's appointees. The court will hear cases regarding gay and transgender rights, deportation protections, and gun regulations. On Friday, the justices added an abortion case, the first since Justice Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation, created a stronger conservative majority. A senior member of the House Democratic Caucus says they have the 217 votes needed to pass articles of impeachment against President Trump stemming from his Ukraine call, even before their planned hearings or formal investigation. Lawyers representing the whistleblower in the case against the president say a second whistleblower has come forward, also an intelligence official who has spoken to the inspector general. Congressional leaders still are trying to hammer out a new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, and supporters say there's a lot on the line for workers. The United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, would replace the 1994 agreement known as NAFTA. 12 million American jobs are supported by exports within North America. Ford Motor Company's president of automotive, Joe Hendricks, explains the trade deal is especially crucial for the auto industry.
Having a competitive USMCA agreement ratified and certified so we can plan the business is very important to our manufacturing footprint and to our employees.
Mexico has already ratified the agreement. There are calls for U.S. lawmakers to approve the deal by the end of November, with hopes that Canada will ratify it around the same time. North Korea said Sunday the U.S.'s claims that nuclear talks between the two countries were good are misleading the public. Discussions between the countries broke down on Saturday. North Korea warned that if the U.S. does not change its approach by the end of the year, then relations between the two countries may immediately come to an end. Back here in the States, victim compensation from the nation's first atomic bomb test conducted in New Mexico nearly 75 years ago will be the subject of a field oversight hearing in Albuquerque today. Roz Brown has the details.
In 1990, Congress passed the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act to provide money and health benefits for uranium miners and people living downwind from nuclear weapons tests who later developed serious illnesses. But Tina Cordova, who will testify today for the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, says those downwind from New Mexico's Trinity site were excluded from the legislation.
It has afforded compensation and health care coverage to other downwinders and some uranium miners, and the downwinders of New Mexico deserve not one dime more, not one dime less.
The government has paid out more than $2 billion in claims since 1990.
This is PNS. As much of the East Coast experiences unseasonably warm fall temperatures, scientists studying the Gulf of Maine point to its rapid warming as a harbinger of what climate change might mean for other parts of the globe.
A few years ago, Chief Scientific Officer at the Gulf of Maine Research Institute, Andrew Pershing, says he and colleagues determined that the Gulf was heating up faster than 99% of the world's oceans.
We're warming at about 4 times the global ocean average, and so that means we're kind of getting a sneak preview of some of the conditions that we expect later in the century and that, you know, other ecosystems are going to see down the line.
Pershing points out that scientists studying the Gulf of Maine have the opportunity to try to come up with solutions to mitigate the effects of warming oceans and then export these ideas to other regions that will likely be facing them in the next few decades. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Now to Idaho, where officials are asking the feds to allow the state to add work requirements to the state's newly expanded Medicaid program. Lawmakers passed a bill this year requiring that recipients ages 19 to 59 work at least 20 hours a week to maintain Medicaid eligibility in Idaho. Benchmarks that Liz Woodruff with Close the Gap Idaho calls punitive red tape.
Idaho would be one of the most restrictive programs in the country. It's a one strike, you're out policy, so you miss your reporting for 1 month, you miss turning in your paperwork, and you lose your health coverage.
There are exemptions to the proposal, including parents of children under 18, people receiving disability insurance, and caretakers. Supporters of the waiver are convinced it would encourage self-reliance for recipients. Talks continue at the Minnesota Capitol on how to get insulin into the hands of those who need it but can't afford it. Mike Moen reports.
The average insulin price has risen 55% since 2014, according to GoodRx. Minnesota lawmakers are trying to address the price hikes, but the GOP-led Senate and the DFL-led House have different views on the best approach. Kim Munson is with the Minnesota chapter of T1 International, a group that advocates for people with type 1 diabetes. She says if lawmakers fail to agree and take a vote in special session, waiting until the regular session next spring could be devastating.
First off, we will know more people are going to be rationing their insulin. My biggest fear would be that we will see another death like we did over the summer with Jesse Radcliffe, boy who died over the summer.
GOP leaders are pushing a proposal that calls on drug makers to provide free insulin supplies for up to a year for those who meet income requirements. DFL lawmakers want to allow emergency supplies without a waiting period to determine eligibility.
Former President Jimmy Carter is recovering at his home in Plains, Georgia after suffering a fall Sunday. The 95-year-old received stitches above his brow. The 39th Commander-in-Chief is the longest-living U.S. president in history. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener-supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. First responders in Greene County will be using a more powerful communication system by the end of the week. County lawmakers were updated on the new high-bandwidth radio system on October 2nd. Greene County Emergency Services Deputy Director Randy Omerod said this switch has been several years in the making. Emergency medical services personnel and law enforcement made the switch to the new system September 10th. On October 9th, fire departments will make the changeover. Public Safety Chairman William Lawrence asked if Greene County EMS would continue running the low-band and high-band systems concurrently. Emergency Manager Specialist Daniel King said the low-band system would remain in effect for about 30 to 60 days. The cost of going high-band varies by department size, King said. He said, and I quote, "It's about $200 to $500 per radio," end quote. The transition from low-band to high-band was part of a four-year communications overhaul at the dispatch center. The upgrade cost about $2 million, with radio upgrade costing $750,000. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Bethany Bump is reporting for the Times Union. A new Siena poll has found the majority of New Yorkers believe vaping is a serious public health problem, and they support the effort to ban flavored e-cigarettes. The number of people with that opinion has increased from 68% to 78%. And while 61% say they support a ban on flavored vape products, 52% say they support banning all e-cigarette products. Don Levy, director of Siena's Research Institute, said, and I quote, "The degree to which, in a really short time, people see vaping as a problem stands out a lot to me. It's a dramatic increase," end quote. Bump writes that opposition to the practice is likely due to news of a multi-state outbreak of lung illnesses affecting people who use electronic cigarettes. 18 people have died so far, and more than 1,000 have been hospitalized, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More than 800 New Yorkers responded to the Siena survey, conducted from September 22nd to October 1st. The poll included questions on a range of public health issues, including marijuana, opioids, alcohol, and tobacco. The majority of the residents continue to support the legalization of marijuana for recreational use. Siena also found that opioid addiction remains a top concern for state residents. Survey takers ranked it as the state's most serious public health problem, and 62% said they have been touched by opioid abuse in some way or another, up from 54% last year. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Ulster County Democratic Party Chairman Frank Cardinal, October 4th, called on County Legislator Hector Rodriguez to resign immediately after an independent investigation by an Albany law firm found that he used his position as a public official to make unwanted and inappropriate advances towards women. Cardinal called upon Rodriguez to step down from the county and state Democratic committees as well. County Executive Patrick Ryan, also a Democrat, said had the actions involved any member of his administration, the findings would have led to, and I quote, "a summary dismissal," end quote. He said the New Platts Democrat, and I quote, "violated the public trust, violated women, and is unfit for public service," end quote. Ryan also urged the legislature to take action to condemn Rodriguez's behavior. Rodriguez did not respond to a request for comment. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Emily Saul is reporting for the New York Post. A federal judge in Manhattan October 7th dismissed the lawsuit filed by President Donald Trump to block the New York District Attorney's Office from obtaining his financial records. Trump sued in September to stop enforcement of a subpoena for 8 years of his personal and corporate documents, including tax returns, The subpoena was obtained as part of a criminal grand jury investigation. Trump's legal counsel argued that he was protected by total immunity while in office. Federal Judge Victor Marrero wrote in a 75-page ruling, and I quote, "The court cannot endorse such a categorical and limitless assertion of presidential immunity. The court cannot square a vision of presidential immunity that would place the president above the law with the text of the Constitution," end quote. Trump immediately filed an emergency appeal with the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, asking the appellate court reinstate the lawsuit and issue a temporary restraining order to stop the DA from executing the subpoena. Read the full story in the New York Post. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting showers for today with the temperature high near 64 and a south wind at 5 to 7 miles an hour. More showers are likely for Monday night, mainly before 10 p.m. Otherwise, cloudy with a low of around 46. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 63 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low of around 44. And on Wednesday, a slight chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 59 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low of around 44. So there you have your weather update, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carol Friedman of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Here is a preview of the feature programs coming up on WGXC 90.7 FM for Tuesday, October 8th. At 12 p.m., Overlook, hosted by Rob Safer. In honor of the arrival of Yom Kippur, Rob will play music primarily from composer John Zorn. Algorithm as a Ritual is on at 2 p.m., produced by Patrick Quinn. And then at 4 p.m., the WGXC Afternoon Show, hosted by Holly Tanner. Holly will speak to Hudson 4th Ward Alderperson Rich Volvo and 1st Ward Alderperson Rob Bujan, plus the Chairman's Corner with Matt Murrell. And then at 8 p.m., The Art of the Hudson Valley, hosted by Chad Weckler. Chad will be interviewing playwright Sandy McKnight about his new book, Kid 69. Visit our website, wgxc.org, for more information.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Welcome to the show, Joanna.
Thank you, Guy, very much, and thank you, Livonia.
So, listen, we're so glad to have you on the show. Tell us, why did you choose to attend the event Earth to Cuomo? I mean, it sounds like some space or something, right?
Well, we thought it was catchy and captivating. Originally, we had something like the Rally for Social Justice and Climate or something. You know, it was
very long.
You know, just like a headline, you know, in a newspaper. And I think it's a fun kind of thing. And the Earth is speaking to Cuomo because we have a climate emergency. And you notice that we're called the Rally for New York Climate. We're inviting people from throughout New York, Governor Cuomo's constituents, as well as Governor Cuomo, to attend the rally.
So what is the Earth's message for Governor Cuomo?
I have a fever, and I'm getting hotter all the time. And what are you doing about it? Mm. Are you doing enough?
That's catchy. I like that.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand. If you're sick, you go to a specialist if you can't find under from your internist, whatever. And our specialists are the scientists. Last year, scientists from all over the world concluded at the UN with a report that we have 12 years to avoid irreversible further damage. And it seems to me that this is an issue that's not being taken as seriously as it should be. I feel that our legislators are not really commit to this against time. I think they're walking rather than running. And I commend Governor Cuomo for signing the new law, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. But I feel that reality of what's happening in New York is not consistent with the ambitious goals that have set targets to reduce carbon emissions, greenhouse gas emissions from the power sector by 100% in 20 years. 20 years is just around the corner. And we see that there are projects just like Dan Scammer, you mentioned earlier in your show. The Dan Scammer plant on the network on the Hudson River has been proposed. It's going to be a 720 fracked gas power plant. When you burn fracked gas, you release carbon dioxide, a greenhouse gas that lasts 100 years in the atmosphere. It accelerates global warming. And furthermore, because we have banned fracking in New York, we haven't banned the use of fracked gas. And as it's transported from Pennsylvania and elsewhere to New York, it leaks methane. And methane is the main ingredient of fracked gas, and it's more harmful than carbon dioxide over that 20-year period that is so critical in meeting goals to reverse greenhouse gas emissions. It's almost 100 times, maybe more powerful than trapping heat in the atmosphere.
So what's the motivation for using the fracked gas? I mean, like you said, we passed a law and you can't frack in New York, but we're going to use the gas. I mean, what's the motivation for doing that?
Well, I guess people don't understand how they get their electricity. They turn the switch on and voila, it's there. But we need fuel to generate the electricity. And there are various ways that we can get that source. In the past, it was coal. And then natural gas came to be the replacement for coal. And while it was somewhat cleaner in a sense with regard to particulate matter, natural gas or fracked gas far from clean because when you burn it, it releases greenhouse gas. And so for years, the fossil fuel industry has not kind of told the whole story and trusted our leaders and to do the right thing. In all fairness, maybe 10 years ago, the renewable energy sources such as solar and geothermal and wind weren't at the state of readiness that they are today. But there's really no excuse today for continuing to use fossil fuel energy when we have renewables that don't harm people or the environment.
So what is your message to Governor Cuomo regarding the Don Scammer plant?
Well, our message goes beyond the Don Scammer plant. Our message is that New Yorkers, his constituents, want the governor to do more to protect their health and their climate.
We say that this new law, the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, is ambitious and wonderful, but how are we going to get from here when we add a plant, say, it gets proposed, Dan Scammer, when we allow Cricket Valley Energy in Dutchess County to go online in January of this year? Power plants have 40, 50, 60-year life cycles, so they continue to generate emissions year in and year out for the next 30, 40, 50 years. We want Governor Cuomo to come to the rally because he has power over what has been in this state. We want him to know that his constituents are worried about the fracked gas projects in their community. We want his constituents to hear from other neighbors. We have a huge state, and sometimes we get caught up in our own battles, and we don't know what's going on all over the place. So this will be a chance for people to get to know one another and to come from all over and convene and in one large voice to tell the governor, please, Governor Cuomo, have to do more to protect our health and our environment. That Danske plant, for example, is going to add emissions together with Cricket Valley. This is all in the Lower Hudson region, Lower Hudson Valley. Danskammer, Newburgh, Ulster County, Cricket Valley, which will be one of the largest in Northeast here in Dutchess County, Competitive Power Ventures Energy in Orange County, like a dirty triangle, you know, and we're all within relative reach of one another. It's going to create havoc for people with asthma and respiratory diseases. It's going to ruin our air quality.
So who'll be speaking at the rally?
Oh, gosh, we have a lineup that's fantastic. We have moms and dads and teenagers and Sunrise Movement kids. You know, we want to continue the message of that power strike on September 20th, that the youth of the world and people all over the world created. But moms are going to speak because this is a rally sponsored by Others Out Front, who advocates for a livable climate for the children today and the children of the future. And that means stopping dangerous infrastructure from expanding. Dr. David O. Carpenter, the director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University of Albany, will speak. He has done some studies of the contaminant that comes from fracking wells and compressor stations. We had an actor, Tim Ginney, who has had in CSI and Homeland, and he's an activist and is a wonderful speaker on hope in the Hudson River Valley. We have Pramila Malik, who has led the battle against competitive power ventures in Orange County, and the heart of that plant is the Prococo bribe scandal, which caused, you know, put a dark cloud over the approval process of that plant.
So what time will it start on the day of the rally? What time will it start?
It's going to start at 1 o'clock, and we're going to have drummers and brass bands making music. And we have a DJ who will play cool music. We have Pat Lama, who will be on in a hard round. This land is your land. And then our speakers will continue the program. We're going to have things. We have signs to give out for people to hold up and be photographed. And we also have a Twitter storm. So I hope that everyone will enjoy the music and the fun, the camaraderie, while we send in a message to Cuomo. And we hope that he comes. He's been invited. We have food trucks, too. So those college kids who are in the area, Vassar, Marist, and others, they can roll out of bed after partying all night and finally when they get there.
1 o'clock, because this is a good time, probably.
right. I appreciate that attention. So this sounds like an enormous thing. How many people do you expect at the rally?
Well, we hope anywhere from 500 to 1,000 people.
That's amazing. That's wonderful.
The more the merrier.
Right.
You know, I am so impressed by all the work that you guys are doing, and the young people are really getting behind, you know, this understanding that our planet is in danger. And I love Earth to Cuomo. I think I'm going to say that a couple of times today. Earth to Cuomo. It's sort of like, hey, wake up.
Yeah. I also am so impressed by this, the mom organizing. That's a powerful position to be speaking from.
Yes, it is, because it's different from the regular environmental group. It's personal, and it's impassioned. Because you know, will do anything to protect your children.
So tell our listeners again where it's going to take place.
at WarriasParkPark on the Hudson River at the foot of Main Street in Poughkeepsie. Just down the street and you'll reach it. It's right off Main Street. There's a bandstand and it's a lovely setting. And for people who want more information, they can do hashtag Earth to Cuomo. But the two is the letter, the word T-O to Cuomo, hashtag Earth to Cuomo. But if you want to go to a website, you can go to ny.mothersoutfront.org/ Earth to Cuomo. And in that case, it's a number two, Earth to Cuomo. And they can RSVP if they choose. That always helps us to predict, crowd control or logistics. But it's ny.mothersoutfront.org.